Ladies and gentlemen.
System loading.
The Kelly Mano Show.
We're on a mission from God.
Is on the air.
Is on the air.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Radio signal from another world.
In three.
What would you been waiting for?
Two.
Start the show. Start the show.
One.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is the Kelly Mano Radio Show, and it is a surprise show. You guys didn't know I was doing this show. Now, I kind of teased this a couple weeks ago. I said on the air that I might have a really personal show coming up. I just didn't know if I was going to be able to do it, and I had to get some permission from some family members. So today's show is going to be a little bit different. There's not going to be any commercials. There's not going to be any sponsors, not a lot of hip-hop music or anything like that, because we're talking about something a little sensitive. And I have brought in a couple members of my family, probably the two members of my family who hate microphones the most, and that would be my Aunt Linda. Say hello.
Hello.
And my brother Chris.
How's it going?
Yeah. So they are here with me to share a story with you guys. About something that happened to our family growing up. And again, I said this was a personal story, but it doesn't just involve our family. It involves someone else's family, too. And things took an interesting turn of events, recently. And I just wanted to share with you guys. So my mom is here, too, somewhere running around the house, but she is spending time with the grandkids. So she may jump in at some point and join us as well. But let's start at the beginning. The year was 1978. And my mom gave birth to a legend known as Kelly Mano. Well, I guess at the time I was Kelly Sumter. But and when I was about, 8 weeks old, Linda, she found out she was pregnant again?
Pretty close, yeah.
So Linda is my dad's sister. So you have known my mom for how long? 35, 40 years?
Probably 40 years.
So you have been with our family for literally everything. And you were there for a lot of what we're going to talk about. Now, so I was 8 weeks old when my mom had an accident named Chris.
That's me.
We'll never let him forget. I think we're Irish twins,
yeah,
or something.
We're
if you're born within a year of each other.
We're 13 months apart. So
almost Irish twins.
Just about.
We're
enough.
Drunk Irish twins.
Yeah.
and so we started in a little house in Granite City on East 24th Street. And when I was about, 3 or 4 years old, our parents bought a new house. And they bought a house on Fortune Drive in Granite City. I looked it up. It is 980 square feet. my dad was a mailman. My mom worked at Kmart. We were just pretty much your standard Midwestern family. And we moved into a new house that my parents absolutely fell in love with. It was a great neighborhood, and it was right down the street from the school that we were going to go to. But one thing that wasn't very clear was that there had been a murder in the house right before we moved in. Something they just kind of failed to mention. So I think technically, because over the years, different stories have taken on different meanings and different avenues. It's like the game of telephone. That's kind of why I invited you guys in here, is because I want to be as accurate as I can. Because not only do you guys know these stories, but so do our cousins. Our neighbors, our aunts and our uncles. I want to make sure I don't say anything that's incorrect. So I think the story went that at the time that, so Steve was the man who was killed in our home. And we're not going to use any last names, but at the time it was ruled an accident. And that is why it was not on any of the homeowner's papers. Now, my dad happened to be a mailman, and I believe that something happened at the post office where I think maybe one of his buddies said, "You moved into a house on Fortune. You know that's that house that guy got killed in, right?" and at that point, they had already put what was it called back then? A deposit or a deed or a...
Yeah, it was like a deposit.
Contract for deed.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, they couldn't get out of the house. I think at the time, my dad was okay with it, but my mom was not. She was very, very scared to move in. But there was no looking back. And so we moved into the house. I was about 3 years old. And I know my mom said she didn't sleep a wink the first night. But a couple of, weeks went by, and my dad and mom had this. This was, I guess, the first big thing that happened in the house. We didn't know a lot about how Steve was killed other than it was with a gunshot wound. we had heard a couple different versions that involved his wife, and her name was Betty. And again, we're not going to use any last names. But Betty had claimed that it was an accident. However, a lot of Steve's family, and I think at some point even the police, doubted a lot of her stories. And we're going to get into some of those later. So the year was 1980 when Steve was killed. And there's two different versions of the story. But it ended with Betty running out of the house, yelling and screaming, "I've killed my husband," or "My husband is dead," something of that nature. And our neighbors, John, Big John, was actually the one who came in and found him and was with him when he, you know, breathed his last breath. And then we moved into the house. So they knew the history of the house. And I guess I was 3 or 4 years old, and my mom and dad had me up with an earache. It was an earache. And I looked over at the recliner and I said, "Dad, who is that man in your chair?" And my mom and dad sort of looked at each other and said, "There's no man in that chair, Kelly." And apparently I was very insistent.
Yeah, you were very insistent. You swore someone was in that chair.
Right. And so they started having me describe him. And so I was able to describe him to my mom and dad, down to even what I was wearing. Now, I know Linda remembers well what I said he was wearing, which is what?
The red plaid shirt.
Red plaid shirt. And the thing that I remember that my dad would always tell the story is that I told my mom and dad he was wearing boots. And maybe this was the summertime, because my parents then asked me, "Why is he wearing boots?" And I don't know if I could communicate with him or what, but I informed my parents that they were his work boots, and that's why he was wearing boots. Now, I was between 3 and 4 years old at the time. I don't remember this, but I have memories of it. But I think it's because I've been told the story so many times. And so that was the beginning of many, many things that happened in our house. So my go-to party joke is that I grew up in a haunted house. We all knew it. And so I called my brother recently and, you know, talked to him and asked him what kind of things he remembered from the house. And so, Chris, if you could share, you know, what you remember from growing up in the house.
Yeah, so I was even younger than you, so I remember very little, but same as you, I heard a lot of the stories over the years, so some of them I kind of think, you know, maybe I'm just remembering them from the stories being told so much, but there were a couple that I do remember myself, and one of the main things I remember was a lot of the noises, the footsteps, and those type of things, and then I would also a lot of times listen down into the vents, try to hear down in the basement, because I know whenever, you know, our parents were down there or anything, I could hear what they were saying and talking, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. And so there were some times at nighttime when I knew mom and dad were in bed or upstairs, and I'd be listening down an event, and I would be able to hear voices. And there were three kind of distinct voices I'd hear. And I couldn't make out what they were saying. It was kind of like background noise. But I could always hear a voice of a man, a voice of an older lady, and then I could hear kind of sounds that sounded like a, you know, young child or a baby.
Okay. Now, and Linda, what do you remember of the house, or what do you remember of? I know it was very hard for us to get a babysitter. Yeah. You know, we should have contacted Laura, because she was our babysitter growing up, and I have vivid memories of her sitting on the couch with us, you know, locked arms, not letting us get up. But what do you remember about the house, or specifically, what do you remember that grandma used to say about our house?
The main thing I remember, the story that comes to mind, is you guys were, of course, really little, and we were both in the basement. You were just a playing, and I don't know where your mom and dad were, but all of a sudden we hear footsteps, and it's like, oh, they're home already. Yeah, we're home already. So I remember going upstairs and looking, and it's like, no, they're not home yet. Back downstairs, and grandma grabs both you guys. We just all go upstairs and just wait.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we're out of the basement.
So this wasn't ever a house where you would think, like, are those footsteps upstairs? I mean, it was like,
you knew they were footsteps.
You couldn't mistake, you know, any of the sounds that you would hear. I hate even using the term haunted, because I never really, none of us felt like Steve was there to hurt us or scare us.
Yeah, and it was a regular looking house too. I mean, you drive down a street and you drive right by it. It's not like what you would picture in your head, a big broken down. It was just a normal little Midwestern home.
That, as a matter of fact, I have pictures of me and you when Chris when we're little in front of the house, and I'm going to post those on my blog later today. So people can kind of get a glimpse of, you know, what the house looked like, what we looked like at the time. You know, because I communicated with Steve, you know, at a time when I was 3 and 4 and I don't remember it. I wonder if there were other times that I don't remember, because the only other visual I have of in my head from the house would be in my bed at night. And I would see the shadow of a man come down the hall and peek in my bedroom. And then he would back out of the hallway, but there were no footsteps, and it was not the shape of my dad. It was a very distinct shape of a man, but I knew it wasn't my own dad. And I think Chris had the same thing.
Yeah, I had the same thing. And for me, I guess he was maybe on the way to your bedroom, because it always looked like, you know, something was just kind of going past my bedroom.
Right.
And so I'd just be kind of shadow going across my doorway.
And he was coming to check on me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of... I have to say that now, as a grown adult, I'm in my late 30s. I do not see ghosts. I do not talk to ghosts. This was my one and only experience with a ghost. I'm a Christian. I understand what the Bible says about ghosts and spirits. But at the same time, I have a story to tell, and I can't not share it. And so one of the things that my mom... that really freaked her out about the house was that we had a closet that we got in and out of all the time. It was our coat closet. It was, you know, it was just like the main closet when you first walked in the house. I think our vacuum cleaner was in there, things like that. And we had been in the house for a couple of years, and she went to open the door, and there on a shelf right in front of her was a sketch of Steve. And as a matter of fact, it was signed at the bottom as if it was like an artist, okay? So we'd been in the house years, and here is this. She assumed it was a self-portrait because it was signed at the bottom. And I believe she left it there. It may still be there today.
Yeah, she said that she left it there. So that's what she's always said.
I think she said she shoved it up in the closet and left it there because it worried her so much. I mean, when you clean out a house, you don't leave stuff like that behind. We grew up with Steve the ghost in our house. And I do remember a time, in high school, whenever we had to go to the library and they taught us how to look up old things on those, what are they called? Microfilms?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like a big black and white scrolling machine.
Microfish, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh my gosh, I want to find our ghosts. Obituary, because we knew nothing about him. I mean, we lived in the house, what, maybe 10 years, something like that.
Yeah.
And so we had long moved out. And when we moved out, my parents insisted on moving into a brand new house. Like, literally, they're like, we don't want anyone else in there.
And when we moved into the new house, I was actually more scared in that house than I was in the old house, because I was so used to
noises.
Little noises, yes, and those type, yes, of things. And our new house was so quiet, and, you know, that quietness was just kind of eerie to me.
Right, right.
And so, you know, I was more scared on our new house than our old house.
And so, you know, living, well, back to the library thing, I tried looking him up. Now, Steve had a very... not an unusual last name, but a name that would be easy to misspell. And I thought I knew what it was. And I even asked my mom, but we weren't real sure. And that was, you know, 15 years ago. And I never really thought much about it again. And like I said, Steve was a friendly ghost. He was a prankster. He was a jokester. Stuff was always going missing and then showing up in funny spots. I can remember as a kid, I can remember my mom and dad sitting in the living room going, "You can leave, Steve. She's not here anymore." You know, because we always felt like he was hanging on to the house. And I think that sometimes when people die in a violent or in a disruptive way, they're not ready to go. And now we've got a little more information that we're going to get into in a minute. But he was only 39 years old whenever he died. And so, you know, he was a father and... a husband, and his life was taken too soon. And for whatever reason, he decided to hang out with us for a long time.
I think he had a story to tell and he wanted you to know.
You know, and that's how I always felt. You know, like even I remember my mom and dad, and this is all, of course, speculation. And I will say that Betty, his wife, has also passed. So she's not here to defend herself. But my family always felt as if that's what he was trying to tell us, was that, you know, he wanted to make clear that this was not an accident. And so fast forward a couple of weeks ago, I don't even know what made me think of this. I have no idea. But I've got something pulled up here on Facebook that I want to show you guys because the date's important. So here, you guys can see right there, on September 9th at 9:53 a.m., I sent a Facebook message to my next-door neighbor, Kelly. Okay? So it was funny growing up because we had a Kelly and a Kelly next door and then a Kelly behind us. So there were three Kellys, and I'm going to read this to you a little bit. So this is on September 9th, and it says, "Hey, Kelly, I hope you're doing well. I have a very odd question for you that you should probably pass on to your parents. I'm looking for the name of the man that was killed in our house. My mom remembers it something like Steve," and then I try to spell the last name, "but I don't know if she's correct. Can you ask what his name was? He haunted us for years, and with the invention of the internet, now I'm nosy, and I want to see if I can find anything about him." So Kelly wrote me back and said, you know, "Good to hear from you." And, you know, she was able to speak with her mom. She got the correct name, and through the power of Facebook, we were able to meet Steve's family. And so last week, me and Aunt Linda and, my brother, Chris, and my mom and my cousin, Jamie, and a bunch of the kids, I contacted them on Facebook, and, the first letter I got back was from one of their husbands saying, "Why are you looking for my family and what do you want with them?" Because my Facebook post was quite creepy. It was like, "Does anyone know a man named Steve Blank that was killed on Fortune Drive in the 80s? Blah, blah, blah." And so this family, who is, you know, 35 years removed from this tragedy, this crazy girl is looking for them on Facebook. But I thought, you know, my dad has passed. And the thing that really shook me was I found out that he had daughters. And I thought, well, maybe that's why he was so connected to me, you know, after he passed. And so we're going to take a little break. I'm going to play a song that reminds me of this house. And if you have a house that you loved and grew up in, it'll remind you of that house too. It's a Miranda Lambert song. And then when we come back, we are going to tell you what happened when we met up with Steve's family. So we will be right back. It is the Kelly Mano Radio Show.
They say you can't go home again. I just had to come back one last time. Ma'am, I know you don't know me from Adam, but these handprints on the front steps are mine. Up those stairs in that little back bedroom, where I did my homework and I learned to play guitar. And I bet you didn't know, under that live oak, my favorite dog is buried in the yard. Nothing but a memory.
swear I'll leave. Won't take nothing but a memory from the house that built me.
All right, so we are back with the Kelly Mano Radio Show. I hope you enjoyed a little Miranda Lambert. I had to turn it down because I couldn't hear it because that song makes me cry. It makes me think of the house I grew up in, and it makes me think of Grandma Sally's house. Those are the two houses that song reminds me of, and I can't even begin to listen to it. So I sent out this thing on Facebook that says, does anyone know a man who was killed on Fortune Drive in Granite City in 1980? I was contacted through their family, and sure enough, through the magic of Facebook, we were brought together. And the first person I talked to was his niece, Becky. And we talked by phone, and she said, you have the whole family rattling, you know, because I mean, this has been 35 years, you know, and they had no idea that we had this connection to them and that we grew up with this ghost in our house. We called him by name. My friends, my family, my cousins. As a matter of fact, when I posted on Facebook that I was looking for this particular person, did you see what some of our cousins were putting?
Yeah.
They were like, oh, God. Oh, my God. Are you really doing this? And I think Carrie put like, oh, my God, I know where this is going. You know, because everybody knew this about my house. Everybody knew that we grew up in a haunted house. At one point, we even thought we had a picture of him. It was a Polaroid where you could see a man like walking in front of us. And Polaroids didn't really double expose back then. That is what it looked like. But I didn't want to bring that out because we weren't sure.
No, it almost looks like a double exposure or something,
right?
Like that.
So I definitely, you know, when you're dealing with someone's family, you don't want to toy with their emotions or anything like that. So we met the family, and we met at one of the coolest places ever, at Cool Beans in Granite City, Illinois. Had you guys been there before?
No.
That was my first time.
So I met a bride there a couple weeks ago, and so I knew about it. And I know the owner from working at Mr. Twist, and so a shout out to Cool Beans. It is like my favorite place in Granite City.
Yeah. You know, in Granite City, you don't think of a place like that being around, you know.
Right.
But it's a really nice restaurant. Although, when you're going to meet people to talk about something serious, next time we need to check if it's open mic night.
With the guy playing Amazing Grace in the background.
Yeah,
did you guys notice that?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Oh, so we met with Steve's two sisters. And we met with Steve's two nieces. So there was four of them. And the first thing I said was like, nice to meet you. This is probably the most awkward introduction that you've ever had. And, you know, but the night ended with hugs. And so, we sat down and we started sharing our stories with them. And they, you know, listened attentively. And one of the first things that they did, and I think it was one of his sweet sisters, pulled out his obituary and also the newspaper article and slid it across the table to me. And the first thing I noticed was the day he died, which was what was on the obituary.
It was September 9th, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So, and on what day did I randomly contact my friend on Facebook, Kelly Pithers? And you guys can see it right here. It was on September 9th. So that was our first shakeup. Because none of us realized that. We didn't put it all together because one of his nieces had the wrong date that he had passed. She was quite young at the time. And so that was our first like, oh, what? I mean, there's 365 days in a year. What are the chances I go looking for this guy on the anniversary of his death and actually find him? So we met with his sisters and we met with his nieces. And they were just the sweetest ever, weren't they?
They were a great family. I mean, just... You know, that's one of the things I was thinking about before he went is like...
I was like,
I
hope they're not crazy
or
Hoosiers.
Yeah, because then it would almost, you know, because we really wanted validation that this was really something that happened. And so if, you know, they were kind of off people or whatever and you weren't sure of their story, but they were so nice and genuine that everything they had to share with us we felt like
it came from the heart. Well, they probably thought the same thing about
us. I just started to say, can you imagine what they're thinking?
They were probably like, please be normal. Please be normal. Please be normal. And then we walk in, which I don't know if we constantly, we had like, what, how many kids with us? Six, yeah, including Camden. Yeah. But the people at Cool Beans were awesome enough to take the kids in the back room so that we could have adult conversation about this and they didn't have to be a part of it. So one of the first things that I needed to share with the family was that we felt like Steve was murdered all along. And they already knew that. And that was a really, really big sigh of relief for us that, you know, because I kind of felt like that was what I needed to tell them. And they were way ahead of us on that. And so we asked his family, how did he die? What was the story? We've heard a couple different versions over the years. So story number one that his wife gave was that she was downstairs crocheting, heard the gunshot wound, and came up and found her husband, and he was cleaning the gun and accidentally shot himself. This was a, I don't remember the gauge, this was a pump shotgun.
Yeah, I think it was a 20.
This is not a small gun that would be easy to accidentally kill yourself with. And the cops, I think, almost immediately noticed that, one, none of the crocheting stuff was out. Didn't they say that was one of the...
Right. That was, it was all still tucked away in the bag.
Right. Yeah. And I want to say that one of his sisters even like knocked her crocheting skills. Or there was some joke about... I mean, the crocheting thing came up quite a bit in our conversation. And so I believe what happened was that the cops started to get hot on her trail. And this is when the story changed. And she said, okay, I did shoot him, but it was an accident. They had had some carpet installed a few weeks before, and I think that she accused the carpet guys of taking some jewelry.